Jeffersonville, listen local.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, is Radio Chatskin. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, The Blue Card, a New York-based national nonprofit dedicated to supporting Holocaust survivors in need. They're hosting a summer retreat in Ulster County for 40 Holocaust survivors in the New York area who range in age from 79 to 105. For many survivors, this is the only vacation they'll have all year, and we'll learn more about this initiative. Catskills Revive brings culture to communities through public art on commercial buildings and street art installations. We'll meet one of the muralists. The Growing Older Together's Lollapalooza event is this weekend. We'll talk to Executive Director Tommy Cambridge about the 1950s-inspired rockabilly fundraiser and GEMS, the volunteer beautification group in Jeffersonville's end-of-summer events. But first, the news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Palestinians across Gaza and the West Bank are reacting to today's killing of Hamas's top leader, Ismail Haniyeh. Hamas blames Israel for the strike that killed him in his residence in Iran's capital, Tehran. Israeli officials have not yet commented. NPR's Hadil Shelchi has more on Palestinians' reactions.
Sitting outside her shelter in the southern Gaza city of Zuweida, Hajja Umm Yusuf told NPR's producer, Enes Baba, that the news of Ismail Haniyeh's death was the worst she's ever received in 70 years. This man was a dove of peace, she says. This man wasn't a regular person. He was a mature man who loved everyone. Haniyeh has been on Israel's hit list since the October 7th Hamas attacks on Israel that killed 1,200 people. In the West Bank's largest city, Ramallah Baha Zayed says he was saddened by the news, but shocked that Iran wasn't able to do more to protect Haniyeh. How could Israel break through Iran's skies and security and let a guest of their country get assassinated, Zayed said. Hadil Al-Shalchi, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Parts of the Israeli-occupied West Bank are on general strike today. A demonstration by Palestinians is planned in the city of Ramallah in protest of Haniyeh's killing. Vice President Harris campaigns in Houston later today. Yesterday, she was in Georgia. She rallied with a large group of supporters at a big stadium in Atlanta. Harris's sudden arrival in the presidential race after President Biden dropped out has triggered fresh interest in voters who might have been undecided. NPR's Stephen Fowler says that the Republican presidential nominee, Donald Trump, and his running mate, J.D. Vance, have had to adjust to a likely new opponent.
Harris has them pivoting both messaging and geography. Vance was in Nevada yesterday, Arizona today and tomorrow. He's got a visit to the border. This is fascinating to note. On Saturday, Trump and Vance will be here in Georgia at the exact same arena as Harris's rally last night, likely with the same capacity crowds and energy.
NPR's Stephen Fowler reporting. Stocks open mixed this morning as Boeing names a new CEO. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 25 points in early trading.
Boeing, which is part of the Dow Index, has tapped aerospace veteran Kelly Ortberg to be its new leader. Ortberg's an engineer who formerly led Rockwell Collins. His challenge will be restoring the jetmaker's tarnished reputation for quality control. Boeing lost $1.4 billion in its most recent quarter. Delta Airlines says this month's CrowdStrike computer outage cost the company $500 million, forcing the cancellation of thousands of flights. Delta told CNBC it plans to seek compensation from both CrowdStrike and Microsoft. Labor costs are rising more slowly in the U.S., which should help to keep a lid on inflation. A closely watched indicator says employee costs rose just under 1% in the second quarter. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR. Parts of northern Vermont are coping with the latest round of devastating flooding. Parts of the state were badly affected yesterday by extremely heavy rain. Fresh flood watches are posted today for northern Vermont. In southern India, rescue workers are still pulling out survivors and bodies of those who died in landslides. These were triggered by heavy rains in a mountainous tropical district early yesterday. Officials say more than 160 people have died. NPR's Dia Hadid reports from Mumbai that toll is expected to rise.
In one clip shared by India's armed forces, they pull a young woman to safety using a rope stretched across a fast-moving river to help stabilize her. Authorities told local media they were prepared for heavy rainfall, typical of this time of year in India, but the rain's intensity caught them by surprise. Fast collapsing hills brought down homes, buildings, trees and boulders. Local media reported most of the victims were tea estate workers who tend to live in flimsy homes. Still, authorities said they had rescued more than 1,000 people, including more than a dozen pregnant women. But as rescue efforts grind on, workers are more likely to find victims, not survivors. Dia Hadid, NPR News, Mumbai.
The Carter Center says Venezuela's presidential election last Sunday did not meet international standards of integrity and cannot be considered democratic. Incumbent President Nicolas Maduro has declared victory. The Venezuelan opposition says it has evidence that he lost by a wide margin. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include JTV, Jewelry Television, offering a variety of jewelry designs, from colored gemstone looks to artisan jewelry and fashion jewelry. JTV can be found on local cable systems or at jtv.com.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Blue Card is a New York-based national nonprofit dedicated to supporting Holocaust survivors in need. Founded in 1939 in the United States, the Blue Card provides direct financial, medical, and emotional assistance to Holocaust survivors struggling to afford such basics as adequate food and health care. They're currently hosting a summer retreat at the Hudson Valley Resort and Spa in Kerhonkson in Ulster County for 40 Holocaust survivors from the New York area, who range in age from 79 to 105. For many survivors, this is the only vacation they will have all year. And joining us now with more is Milana Hazan, Associate Executive Director of the Blue Card. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Tim.
Thank you for being here. And I want to talk to you about the retreat, but I wanted to let folks know who may not be familiar with the Blue Card a little bit more about your mission. Can you tell folks a little bit more?
Absolutely. Well, firstly, thank you so much for the opportunity, and thank you for that beautiful introduction about the Blue Card. And as you said, the Blue Card is a financial organization that provides assistance to Holocaust survivors in the United States. We have a number of different programs that we've sort of designed over the years because we have this unique snapshot being a national organization, really understanding the needs of survivors. And based on those needs over the years, we've developed different programs that are in different categories, right? So we have emergency cash assistance programs, and these are really geared to preventing, let's say, homelessness, assisting survivors with dental and medical help that they wouldn't be able to afford otherwise, as well as special medical equipment. These programs are really geared at ensuring that survivors remain safely and independently in their homes for as long as possible. We also have emergency prevention or ongoing monthly assistance support that we provide survivors, so they will receive financial assistance from us on ongoing basis, you know, and they will use that money where they need it most. It could be for food, for medication, for their maybe pharmaceutical needs, really where it's needed most. And we also have some tech-friendly programs and as well as support for survivors' health and well-being. And, you know, the summer retreat is really one of those programs. You know, like you mentioned earlier, you know, without the support, survivors really would not be able to have any other vacations during the course of the year. It's something that they look forward to all year. It's a special retreat where they could get away from New York City for a little bit, spend a beautiful few days up in the Catskills with delicious and nutritious meals. Of course, spend time with their fellow survivors and have different activities like aquatics, and they'll have special, fun games, and they'll have challah baking. So it's very exciting. And of course, they also get a chance to relax and just get away from the city for a few days.
And you're up there in Ulster County now just arrived, I guess, in the last day or two. How's it going so far?
It's beautiful. I was actually there yesterday and it was incredible. It was just, everyone was so, in such great spirits. You know, it's always exciting to be able to spend, some time with our survivors because, we're always kind of in the office and we don't get to see our survivors very often. But it was really an incredible day yesterday and the day before. We got to really hear their stories, you know, we're seeing now that survivors more than ever are coming forward and sort of opening up about their experiences and really are eager to teach the lessons of the Holocaust. You know, and it's really incredible to be able to hear firsthand from them. You know, I'm with the Blue Card now for almost 13 years, and, you know, I'm touched more and more daily by their stories.
And this retreat, you mentioned that it helps them, you know, get away and disconnect, but it also helps them be around other people because, you know, in the summer they can sometimes get lonely when friends or relatives go away for the summer.
Yes, exactly. You're right. It's really beautiful. It's a chance for them to spend time with other families. You know, majority members of the group are, you know, are widows, so they don't have their spouses anymore. And a lot of these survivors, you know, just generally speaking, survivors don't always have children for a lot of reasons. It's because they were either not able to due to, you know, the persecution that they faced during the wars, or, you know, thankfully they're living much, much longer now, but that also means that in a lot of cases, they're surviving their own children. And, you know, like many Holocaust survivors, their family members perished in the Holocaust, so they don't necessarily have cousins or other family members. So this is really a unique opportunity for them to be able, you know, to be part of a community.
And you mentioned, you know, the things they've gone through, living through that experience and dignity being taken from them forcibly, but becoming vulnerable once again as they age. How does this retreat help with your ongoing mission?
Absolutely, because it's a constant reminder, you know, sort of the summer retreat and the other programs that we have for our survivors. It's a constant reminder to them that they are not alone. You know, there is an organization out there who really truly cares for them. We have survivors who have been on our roster for well over two decades, for 20, 25 years. You know, for so many of them, the Blue Card is a lifeline to the outside world. And, you know, it gives them a chance. The Blue Card really gives these survivors a chance to stay in their homes. There's just so much pain and trauma that's associated with being forced out of their homes. And that's exactly what we're trying to avoid now, is that the survivors are aging safely and in place, and they also know that the Blue Card is there that cares very much for them.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Milana Hazan, Associate Executive Director of the Blue Card. They're hosting a summer retreat in Ulster County for 40 Holocaust survivors in the New York area who range in age from 79 to 105. Milana, you know, what are some of the things that you have taken away from just this experience so far with some of these survivors that are there at the retreat?
It's an incredibly invaluable experience. There are no words to really describe it. I'm a grandchild of a Holocaust survivor, but I unfortunately never met my grandfather. He was very sick after the war, and, you know, it was something that was very hard for me to deal with growing up. It's something that my father never spoke about, you know, but being a part of the Blue Card, it is just, it's incredible. I feel like I'm privileged to do the work that I do, you know, with the number of survivors diminishing every year. It's incredibly time imperative, and our mission is more important now than ever before.
And this was established by, is it Adolf and Lottie Rosenberg? Did they establish this program? Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, absolutely. They're very, it was one of our late donors who really created this program in memory of his parents about 15 years ago. And we really carry that on over the years, and his family is still very much involved and support the program.
And what are other events that you have coming up that help support these survivors after the retreat? I know you offer so many different types of things, or what are some of the things that are coming up?
So we have a lot of different events throughout the year. This is our biggest, really our biggest event for survivors. We're also working on creating something now for the high holidays coming up. Perhaps, you know, some packages for survivors with food and other needed necessities for the holidays. So that's one of the things that's coming up. And of course, we have our programs, the financial assistance that's ongoing and throughout the year. And that's something that they know they can count on every day.
And if folks want to learn more, get involved, do you have volunteers? How can folks get involved?
Absolutely. And we have different unique volunteer programs depending on what, you know, what someone is interested in doing or how they're interested in participating. And they can always reach out directly to the Blue Card. And it's info@bluecardfund.org.
And if you go to the website, bluecardfund.org, you'll learn about that. But also, if you scroll down, you'll see the smiling face of a Holocaust survivor, Margot Friedlander, on the cover of Vogue, the German Vogue. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. She was a survivor. And Masha Perl, our executive director, was actually quoted recently in that Vogue magazine. So it's really an honor to have her on the cover.
Yeah, and telling her story, and you're helping tell those stories and assist those survivors of the Holocaust so that their dignity is not taken again in their later years. And I hope you enjoy the rest of this summer retreat in the Ulster County, and everyone there is able to relax and engage and just enjoy the experience. Milana Hazan, Associate Executive Director of the Blue Card. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, and thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, more from Radio Chatskill. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. Every Friday night, it's my goal to bring WJFF listeners great music. Music from all over the world. Stuff that's been lost in the archives and needs to be heard. Classics you already knew you loved. And new stuff from established and emerging artists. All right here on The Mixtape, WJFF Radio Catskill.
Friday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for One Small Step, an effort to remind the country of the humanity in all of us. I'm Isabel Braverman, and we are pairing up strangers in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania to have conversations, not debates. Get to know your neighbors. Let's take one small step away from division and toward each other. Sign up at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. GEMS is a volunteer organization that works to enhance all that Jeffersonville, New York has to offer. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke to GEMS representative Tim Corcoran about the summer events in Jeffersonville's community park, including this Friday screening of The Lion King.
Good morning, Tim, and welcome to Radio Chatskill.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Yes, and you are here as a representative of GEMS of Jeffersonville. So what is GEMS? What does GEMS stand for?
Well, GEMS stands for Jeffersonville Enhances More of Sullivan. And GEMS is a great organization which is comprised of people wishing to make improvements in Jeffersonville, especially with all of the beautiful plants and flowers that Jeffersonville has, and working to make Jeffersonville a more of a friendly, open community. This goes to keep the pristine natural beauty of the area through cleanup and creative community involvement. And there's a lot of volunteers. We have really about 30 active volunteers right now in GEMS, and they're all people that spend their time planting and taking care of the flowers. And if you've driven through Jeff recently, you'll see how beautiful it is.
And you'll see people working.
Yes, we'll see people working all the time. They're also hook GEMS also inspires community pride, and they have students of all ages, which support volunteerism. It's teaching young kids it's important to volunteer, to be part of the community, and they work with different youth organizations while encouraging a multi-generational cooperation. So it's a great organization for Jeffersonville, a great organization for the area, and it makes things look pretty. Flowers are fantastic to have, and it makes everyone feel better when they come into Jeff.
Yeah, they do make you smile.
Yes, they do.
And you're here also to tell us about what's going on at the park this summer.
Right. So for those of you who don't know, Jeff has his park for the last few years. It's called the Backyard Park, and it's right over
the main bridge,
the bridge that you drive over right as you get toward the edge of Jeffersonville. And it's a beautiful little park. And recently, several years ago, money was raised by GEMS to build a stage there. And there's a beautiful stage where at certain times there's music. We recently just had great concerts by different jazz musicians and people that are known in the area for their talents in music. And there's a band coming up. Actually, we have coming up for the future on August 17th is B.J. Hendrickson and the Bones Crew. So this little park, we want everyone to start using. And GEMS keeps it up. And it's the town owns it, but GEMS runs the stage out of that. And so now we've started doing outdoor movies in the summertime.
Wonderful.
So recently we had we showed Dirty Dancing, and we had a nice crowd out there. People loved it. A great summer movie. Sitting outside, we have a concession which sells hot dogs, chili dogs. You can get potato chips, popcorn. We have a popcorn maker, sodas, water. So it's great to come out with family, watch a movie outdoors. Similar to those of you of a certain age who remember going to a drive-in movie, which you have to be of that certain age, but it was you watch the movie outdoors or in a car, and it's a great thing to do in the summertime. So coming up now, our next thing is coming up right now, August 2nd, which is this Friday night, and it's going to be the Lion King, people love that, and it's great for kids. And we're inviting everyone to come out with your family to see The Lion King. And it's free, which is a fantastic thing. It's a free movie. And they can stop by and get a little popcorn, buy a soda, sit and enjoy The Lion King. The movie will start at dusk. Again, it's this coming Friday, August 2nd, at dusk.
And dusk could be?
Dusk could be whenever dusk wants to be.
We
are not able to control dusk.
Right.
We would like to control dusk, but we can't do it. So, but we suggest that people show up around, 7 o'clock or so, at least like an hour before. Also, right before this, which is going to be great for the kids, is there's going to be a book reading.
Wonderful.
Yeah, a children's book reading by Caitlin. Caitlin owns Ratty Books in Jeffersonville, a new store in Jeffersonville, which everyone should check out. And she's reading a book called Monkey Puzzle by Julia Donaldson. And that's going to happen right before the film starts. So really, call up some people. Get people out there. Get kids out there. Get parents out there. Get everybody out. We also suggest people bring your own chairs. There are chairs there, but you'll be more comfortable if you bring something that you're very comfortable with. And the backyard park is just it's a comfortable, fun place to be. And it gives people around Jeffersonville a little bit of entertainment, something free, something to join regular local people out there. Just meet friends, talk, enjoy a film, and have a good time.
I think you mentioned earlier that you have a flea market coming up there as well.
Yes. We have the flea market is coming up on August 31st. We also have GEMS also sponsors the Halloween Kids Trunk or Treat, and that's going to be on October 31st. Then later on in November, we have the tree trimming, which will be coming up. Probably, I think, in December, it looks like we're going to have a Swiss Christmas market with vendors on a community Christmas party, wreath making, cider, cookies, Christmas caroling. So GEMS is trying to utilize the backyard park, which is a beautiful place to be. You have to come and see it. and trying to, you know, get people out. Come and join other fellow community people. And thank also all of the volunteers that work for GEMS, who makes this happen, who inspires all of it and make all this happen for residents of the area. So it's a great way. It's a community effort. It's a great way to have fun, support the village, support GEMS, and have a good time.
Thank you so much for coming in and sharing this and for the work you do.
Well, thank you. And again, thanks to everyone for supporting GEMS.
And thanks to culture reporter Valerie Manzi. And we'll take a break when we come back. Growing Older Together and their upcoming fundraiser, Lollapalooza. We'll find out more after this quick break.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Growing Older Together is a nonprofit serving residents age 60 and older in Wayne County and Western Sullivan County and adjacent areas, both with the practical means and social connections to live independently in their homes for as long as possible. This weekend, the Saturday, is their second annual summer fundraiser, Lollapalooza. And joining us now from Growing Older Together is Tommy Cambridge. Hi.
Tim, good morning.
Good morning.
Back in the studio.
It's good to see you. And Lollapalooza, the big event. I asked you off air here, how's it going?
It's exciting. Going. You know, we got a lot of experience last year and learned a lot of lessons, so we're able to use those this year. It's much less stressful, but there is still some.
There's a little bit.
But it's going to be great. It's going to be even better than last year.
Now, Lollapalooza, it was originally last year held in the tiny, tiny hamlet of Lava, but you guys have moved to a larger location. Where is it being held this year?
Yes, this year we've moved across the Delaware River, not too far, in Milanville, Pennsylvania. It's on a stunning hilltop. It's called the Second District Brew Farm. They actually grow hops there for some brew pubs in Philadelphia, but it's a wonderful event space with 360-degree views on a hilltop, and we're going to have a big tent and all the fun stuff that goes along with it.
And the fun stuff you have for the theme this year is a 1950s rockabilly-style carnival. Why did you guys land on that as a theme?
You know what? I don't remember. Except, well, last year
there may have been beer and hops involved.
Of course. Yeah. We bounced around a lot of ideas. I believe it was one of our founders, Jane Luxinger, last year, who said, let's do some sort of a 50s picnic. And from there, it just kind of grew. We brainstormed, threw in the rockabilly aspect, found a wonderful band last year. We have a different one this year from Kingston, New York. They're called Laura Hope and the Arctones, and they're pretty torchy and rocking. So we're looking forward to that. And then we've got pulled pork barbecue and coleslaw, all the good stuff that happens, you know, in a summer picnic. Cupcakes and cotton candy and all the things that kids would like too. We designed this not just for seniors. You know, it is for the whole community, youth, family, and seniors. We're hoping to attract a younger generation of volunteers, and we want to make it a must-attend event on the community calendar.
Well, it's also a way to explain to folks and let them know what you guys do at Growing Older Together as well.
Yes. You know, when I go around and talk about the organization, I still get a lot of responses like, well, this is the first time I've heard of it. You're the county's best-kept secret, and I don't look at that as a compliment. You know, to me, that's like that's an impetus to do better. And so thank you for giving me the time to come and talk to you today. But we want to get the word out. We've been around for 8 years, and we have about 75 volunteers who do wonderful jobs for the seniors in our area.
I mean, that's an amazing number of folks that are helping, 75 folks, helping those folks, as we said in the introduction, live independently. Yes. And in their own space for as long as possible. We've talked about it a little bit before, but let's remind folks some of the things that you do to help the folks stay in their house.
Yes, our biggest thing we do is private transportation. And all of our volunteers are vetted. They have clean driving records and criminal background checks. We'll take people wherever they need to go. Mostly it's to doctors or to the grocery store to pick up groceries, but we'll take them to go visit their grandkids if that's what they want. We do technical support. Everybody could use help with that, but seniors particularly can be challenged with technology issues like connecting a new printer to a home's Wi-Fi or a troublesome TV remote. I have trouble with that. That's why I don't watch TV. One of the reasons.
Just listen to the radio.
Yes, exactly. And simple home tasks. You know, we get up on ladders and change batteries, do things that people used to be able to do and can't or shouldn't. And sometimes it's just having social visits, Tim, you know, going and having a cup of tea or reading a book or just listening, which seems to be a vanishing art.
Yeah, I mean, folks, loneliness is prevalent, and this organization helps, you know, bring people together. And in this community event you're doing, Lavapalooza, mm-hmm. bringing those people, as you mentioned, that are part of Growing Older together, but also inviting the larger community. What are some of the other things that folks can experience when they attend the event on Saturday?
We have a fantastic auction. And Mr. Greg Triggs, who has a show on Mr. Gregory Triggs, he is our MC and auctioneer. We have merchandise, experiences worth thousands of dollars, fine art, and that's going to be a lot of fun. There's also a raffle that goes along with it and a 50-50 raffle. We've got the band, Laura Hope and the Arctones. They're going to do two sets of rockabilly music, so there will be music and dancing. There's all the fantastic food I talked about, and there's carnival games. We have a little midway set up, and all of that is part, it's all under one price. $45 gets you in for all of that stuff. If you have the winning bid on an auction, that's separate. And children 10 and under are free. We're wanting to bring families in and make it affordable for them.
And we mentioned this is a fundraiser for the organization, the main fundraiser you have. What are some of the fund? How do the funds use? We mentioned some of things you provide for folks, but how do you use these funds to support?
Well, speaking of getting the word out, this year we had a much more aggressive marketing campaign because the word of mouth wasn't really getting us the traction we needed. So a lot of it has already been earmarked to pay for advertising, both in papers and on the news, on the radio. The Calicoon Theater is doing ads for us. So it's mainly that. It's also volunteer training. And we'd like to have some appreciation for our volunteers, too, to do a few things for them and, not spend too much, but still throw a little love their way.
We're all keeping an eye on the weather, and you have this set for Saturday, but there is a rain date on Sunday.
Sunday, August 4th. It'll be at the same time.
But there's also a tent.
There's a tent. Because this place is a hops farm, they have a tasting room. They've got great beer for sale there. So I think we're going to be covered, literally, for if there should be any elements dropping from the sky. It'd have to be pretty severe for us to push it to the rain date, and we're not even thinking about canceling.
So
it's going to happen.
Lavapalooza happening, rain or shine, weatherproofed for everybody's protection. Yeah. Let's remind folks about the details again. Saturday at the 2nd District Brew Farm.
Yes, and that is at 163 Fallsdale Road in Milanville, Pennsylvania. It's very close to the Calkins Creamery. $45 per ticket. You can get tickets in advance at myrivertickets.com. You can go to our website, growingoldertogether.org, and click the splash page there. It'll take you right to the ticketing site. We'll be selling them at the gate as well. And
it's from 3 to 7, so like a nice afternoon thing.
Yes.
Afternoon, early evening. And if folks are listening and they might want to become a member or get involved as a volunteer, where can they go? And same website?
Yes, if they come to the event, we'll have all kinds of information. But otherwise, you can go to our website, growingoldertogether.org, and we have two tabs up at the top on our homepage, one for I'm interested in being a member and another one for I'm thinking about being a volunteer. They'll collect the information and somebody will get back to you.
I like what you say on your website, too. We do the kinds of tasks you might ask of a friend or a neighbor. One call does it all, just ask. And I think that's important for folks who are, older and want to, maybe afraid to reach out. But this organization really provides that community.
We are neighbors helping neighbors. That's essentially what we do.
Tommy Cambridge from Growing Older Together, Lavapalooza, this Saturday. Have a great time.
Thank you, Tim.
All right. We'll take a break. And when we come back, Catskills Revive. We're creating public art on buildings and street art. We'll meet one of the artists after a break. This is Radio Catskill.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Another way to help us bring you the news is donate a vehicle you don't need. Car, truck, motorcycle. You can donate to this station and it could mean hundreds of dollars of support. Thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not. Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at WJFFradio.org.
Hi, Ira Flatow here from Science Friday. We view Sci-Fry as a refreshing break from the daily bombardment of political news. You know, there's lots of important and interesting science and technology out there. Whether it's the deep, dark mysteries of the universe or your deep, dark microbiome, it's all right here. So start your weekends with thought-provoking news on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill. Catskill's Revive aims to bring murals, art, and culture to communities with public art on commercial buildings and street art installations. Earlier this month, they gathered emerging and established artists to create murals on walls and 8x8 panels for the second annual Wurtsboro Founders Day Street Fair. John Briner was one of the many muralists who took part in this Catskills Revive project during the street fair, and Radio Catskills' Patricio Rubio spoke to him about his work as a muralist, artist, illustrator, and book publisher.
I started painting murals probably around 1995. The original inspiration was I have some artists in my family. My grandmother, my mom are both very creative, and I grew up reading comic books, and that moved into skateboarding. Back then, that was really a way to start creating art. We were creating our own t-shirts and kind of our own skateboard stickers. I think that was my first practical application of art. And ever since then, I came up as a teenager. I was interested in graffiti art, and that kind of led to bigger and different types of ideas I wanted to convey. The murals I do nowadays are quite different than what I started out doing. There's definitely a little bit of an evolution of what I do now. And yeah, I've been doing this basically full time since I graduated college, which was around 2003. I've just dove into the art world back then, got lucky, got some breaks, sold some work, and I've just kept going at it ever since. And the murals have really come about maybe since 2013 or 14. I started to do the work you're seeing me doing now. And yeah, that's how I've gotten to where I'm at now.
And you actually just came out with a book not too long ago, right? Power Kingdom is graffiti in Poughkeepsie, and it chronicles two decades, the 90s and 2000s of graffiti art in Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was my first book I put out under a new book publishing company I started, My Daily Habit Publishing. And it's just, these are books that I'm starting off with my own photo archive. So the first book was the history of, well, quote unquote, the history of the city of Poughkeepsie's graffiti. There's always more to it than you could fit in a book, but I really had a lot of photos, and I had friends that were some of the original people in Poughkeepsie painting, and through their archives of photos and mine, I was able to put out a 224-page hardcover. I like to think of it as a history book. It's a different type of history book, but it's hundreds of full-color photos of murals and graffiti that was very temporary. In some cases, it might still be around, but not very many. So it's an interest of mine to really document the ephemeral nature of graffiti. So yeah, those have been the focuses of my newest books I've been putting out.
I saw recently a documentary on the history of graffiti focused on New York City, in particular the Bronx, and what they had, the artists, what they went through and how they created their art on the cover of darkness sometimes, and going to dangerous situations, going to the tunnels of the subways, and going on the high billboards that overlooked like the Cross Bronx. It's just amazing to learn the history of the artist and the history of the art movement.
What documentary was that?
I got the name of it. It was on YouTube. I saw it.
Okay.
And yeah, and it focused, what caught my eye, because I'm originally from the Bronx, really caught my eye was some of the locations they were featuring in the documentary, was some of the locations I grew up in. So it was interesting, you know, seeing growing up, I grew up in the late 80s, 90s, and seeing all that artwork, not knowing the artist behind it or the history behind it. It was just amazing to see and how that sort of brought in the culture of that we have today, and it was skateboarding, and just how that lent the whole graffiti movement, lent to a whole new artwork. It's really expanded the globe, really.
Absolutely. And there's not many art forms that can be credited to America alone, and let alone the youth. And graffiti in New York City or Philadelphia, depending on where you think it started first, is that, where this is an art form created by youth reconstructing the alphabet on the major metropolitan transit system. That's a very unique thing. And as I get older, my understanding of graffiti and what's right and wrong changes a little bit. But even if you're not a fan of it, it is a movement that it's unique to America. And for nothing else, that's unique alone. If you look at most of our music, it stems from other cultures. But I at least believe things like skateboarding, things like graffiti can be traced to American culture. Perhaps skateboarding from surfing comes from Polynesian, Hawaiian, but still the actual street skating culture. And then that leads into all the streetwear brands, all the modern clothing companies that are out. That's all from youth culture.
So you made the transition from street art, you could say, for lack of a better word, street art, making graffiti up, making tags and making the alphabet look really unique, into this, what you're doing now, which is a muralist and type of more, it's still abstract work, but it's more realistic work and doing it for like commission. How did you make that transition?
I think it just came about with my ideas becoming broader than just a 5-letter name. At a point, words didn't really describe what I wanted to say anymore with my art. That transition probably happened around 2002 or 3, where I started to get a lot more into producing work on paper and specifically old books. That was what brought me off of the walls. So to explain a little bit, when you're going to paint a graffiti mural, you have to figure out how you're going to get there, where you're going to leave your car. You have to get your supplies there. You might have to hop a fence to get in there. And then you're going to be painting very intensely, where I always said, if you don't make any noise, you can sneak up on me because I'm so intensely focused visually, but every single sound I hear. So with all that, I couldn't just paint a white canvas when I went to art school for illustration in Manhattan. I did that as a way to be closer to graffiti, honestly, and to be closer to different artists. But being there exposed in Manhattan at School of Visual Arts exposed me to just a much broader world of art, where, like I said, words and letters, you know, represent what I want to say anymore. And then the white canvas was a big obstacle. So I got past that by searching out old paper. I started to find all these, living in Brooklyn, and I was finding all these thrown away books with water damage. And I'm just looking at the inside blank pages and that brown, yellow paper, for whatever reason, it just clicked with me. And so that became my next thing, like this next exciting thing I needed for it to click with me. I explained all the excitement going into graffiti, so that wasn't there for painting on a canvas. But suddenly going out and finding these old paper surfaces now became a game for me. And for whatever reason, they generated images. And so for, you know, 15 years, I mainly focused on repurposing books, old books, nothing anyone was going to buy or read. It was all discarded. I had libraries that were throwing out books that were contacting me, and so I would take them apart and use the blank surfaces as my surface to tell my story. And so that really became the focus of my work. And I guess as the time went by, I still had all my friends that were in the graffiti world and in the art, the street art mural world, which really took off, especially in New York City. And I was involved with some founders of the different mural festivals down in Queens. And so I was seeing all these murals that are going up, and the level of the quality and workmanship in them. As I'm now working on paper and books, I'm also like, man, I want to get back out there on the streets. I want to get back out to painting when people interact with you while you're doing it, and you just get to learn the neighborhood you're in. It's unusual to stand in front of a wall for 8-9 hours a day in a neighborhood you don't live in, but murals will do that for you. And through that, you'll get to meet the people there, and hopefully they like what you're doing. And so I think all those things just made me say, you know, I want to get back out to painting murals. And that in addition to the paint changing, the spray paint that's created now is created for people to paint murals with it. It's not Rust-Oleum or Krylon, which I grew up using. Once I started using these new paints, and you can get like thin lines for eyebrows or just shading and details, I realized I could do what I want. And on the wall, that's what motivated me to paint murals now.
It's amazing.
That and the fact that the immediate change it causes, like a mural, it can take me a couple of days, but the impact, it's very immediate. Hopefully it improves where you're at. And I like to create something that's available for people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all, you know, season. There's no doors to go in. There's no gallery to go in. It's just there for you. So that's all those things combined to bring me back out to paint walls.
It's amazing how this art form has become more acceptable, and now there are specific spray paints available for artists like you. And I agree with the idea of creating public artwork. When I visit a city, murals often stand out to me, and I feel like they reflect a sort of the town's character. For instance, when I drive into Binghamton, the mural that I see when I get off the highway as I drive in gives me a sense of what the place is about. Do you ever feel pressure to represent the town you are working in, like Wurtsboro or Poughkeepsie, where you're based? Do you worry about the locals feeling that your artwork does not represent them? Does that concern you?
Yes, it does. And I think that it's definitely something that needs, you can't be tone deaf. You got to know where you're at, and you can't know everybody. You can't know what everybody wants, but I guess I do take it into consideration to an extent. And if it's just something where it's like, what I want to do isn't going to work, then that's okay. That hasn't happened too many times. I do know that being such a large and accessible piece of art that might just pop up, not everybody likes change. Some people do, but some people might see this change as it may be a changing of the type of folks that are going to want to be around. Me as an artist, it's hard to really take into consideration everyone else's point of view, because what would I be creating at that point? It has to come from yourself and what you want to put out. And I think that the message that I'm most interested in currently is that we all share this planet, and I don't know how long it's going to be around. So a lot of my artwork tends to deal with nature, which it'd be hard to take serious an argument of a pro planet like piece of artwork. It's just, so you don't really get a lot of pushback from that, but it does come into consideration if you want to paint portraits of people. That's a big one, and perhaps I would want to, but it's just, as an artist, you never, me personally, and most of the people, the artists and muralists I know, there's so much work, and it's not a compensation thing. We're never compensated like what we should be. And that's fine. I have other jobs. This is for the love of it. But with that said, it is so much work. It's so much like, you know, you're exhausted, your body. As I'm doing these, I'm thinking, I only have so many more of these in my life that I'm going to be in the sun climbing up scaffolding and ladders. So you really have to pick what you want to paint and what you're going to be interested in doing it, because you know it's going to be so much work and you hope people are going to appreciate it. But does it make me pick maybe safer ideas? Perhaps, yeah, because I don't really want to, I want to create something to like make people, I don't know, happy is the right word, but I guess happy. I don't want to upset people. I'm not creating art to upset people. So I do consider it, yeah, when I'm looking at a wall in a space. Always the best ones are the ones where they're like, do what you want. We know what you do as an artist and we want you to do that. But if it's sometimes those are walls that are more private, you could say, if this is something in the middle of the street that everyone's going to see, I do think you should get a little bit of a gauge of what's going on in the area, and just you want to contribute, not divide.
If you are just joining us, we're talking to John Brainer, one of the muralists who worked with Catskill Revive and created a mural in the village of Wurtsboro. You know, John, your work is by nature temporary. You're creating a mural that, you know, at some point maybe the building might be knocked down, or a different owner takes over the building and your mural gets painted over. Knowing that it's temporary, it's not forever, how does that make you feel?
Human. It's maybe it helps me accept how life is. It's a constant change, and you really can't control it. On a broader sense, yeah, I mean, there's that. But as an artist, you do want it to last as long as possible. But I think coming from the background that I did, where you get your photo as you finish your mural, because it might not be there the next day, I do have that in me as well. But knock on wood, I haven't really had anything I wasn't expecting to happen. I can tell if I'm painting a building and I'm like, they don't really want to fix up the building right now. They just want something nice on it. Sometimes those situations, they're going to paint over this entire thing and maybe tear down the building even. So yeah, there is that. Sometimes when you apply for grants and things, there, you know, I've encountered where you can't get grants for murals because they're like, who's going to maintain the mural in 10 years? And it's, I will, if the building's even there, the way these buildings are being torn down and repurposed, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's very up in the air as a muralist and a street artist, for lack of better words. So if you are putting it out there, expect it to get lived on or lived with or lived over in some cases.
You have this artwork up in the village of Worthboro now. Was this the first time visiting Sullivan County to create this mural?
Yeah, actually it was. Yeah, I had never been out. And yeah, I maybe had been to Middletown, and I don't know if that's even Sullivan County, but definitely not out in the Catskill Mountains like that. And it was a great area. And I'm tending to gravitate away from cities now at this point in my life. So I'm looking for some place to move. I don't know if it's going to be out there. It seemed a little too rural for me, but it's definitely a nice change of pace to living in cities can get chaotic after decades.
Yeah, definitely. We'll definitely invite you back again to Sullivan County, because if you only been to Worthboro, there's other parts of the county. Worthboro is great. It has a growing art community there, but it's there. Sullivan Catskills, where we are, it's really, I think, rich with a lot of artists. So that's my little plug there.
No, absolutely. That's one of the things about living up here is there's all these places I haven't got to go to yet. So
yeah.
That's very exciting. You know, with their actual street fair, I was surprised how many people came. And it was like 90 degrees that day. And there was thousands of people. I was impressed with that. I do a lot of these fairs and festivals where people try their hardest. But yeah, they really had a good turnout with this one.
So let's describe your artwork that you made for the street fair in Worthboro. It's two hands coming from the sky and joining into the middle. You want to describe the mural that you created there?
It's the two hands are sort of, they're holding, there's like a boat. That was a boat there in the middle. And the boat grows into a tree. And then out of the tree, there was a lighthouse. Not that there was a lighthouse in Worthboro. It's just more of an icon that's repetitive in my work these days. Dark days, so we need a beacon of light. So the lighthouse worked its way in. But yeah, when I learned that the mural would be ending up at the D&H Canal Park, I took a look at some of the history, and I saw some old photos of the canals and kind of inspired the boat, the wooden slotted boat I painted, and what's being accompanied by the green hands of nature, you could say. I like to make, we were said about making something for the area it's going to be in. So, you know, I took it into consideration, but they also, they really let me do what I wanted to do. And so that's always really good. And I thought overall, like the reaction of people coming up was everybody seemed really into what I was doing. And the other thing was the variety of the murals was really good. And it showcased a lot of different, from mediums to styles. So I think people also gravitated towards that as well. And yeah, I thought the whole festival in general was great. Like I said, it's hard to find any way to make money as an artist. So this was a great opportunity. And it seemed like that, as far as I can tell, the tourism is tied in a little bit with the street, which is what needs to happen. I feel like if a lot of these towns and cities, the tourism, to work with the local artists, I think they might be surprised what could come out of it. So hopefully that continues on other places.
So what does the future hold for John Brainer? What is the next projects that you're working on?
Right now I am working on an art guide for the Open Studios we do in Poughkeepsie. So I'm working with the organization for the Poughkeepsie Open Studios, Gene Hinckley, and we are collecting all the info from the different artists that have art studios here. We have a two-day event every year. It's September 28th and 29th this year. So we decided to try a more ambitious guide this year. We usually have a guide that showcases the artist, but we want to do a more ambitious one where we have an interview with Lala Montoya, who's a local artist here, and we have listings that go beyond just Open Studios, where we're listing events through January, and we're trying to make it more accessible beyond the two-day Open Studios. We want to, like, the guide we're making it's a free guide. It's going to be placed for free around. So we want people to be able to take this guide and have the artist's name, see their websites, maybe contact them, definitely contact them outside of the Open Studio timeframe. Artists can keep living and working. So that's right now what I'm working on. It's really time consuming I'm doing the layout and the publishing of it, but collecting, if anyone's been a curator, they know collecting images and info from artists, it's, I think, wrangling cats is the expression. Yeah, it's not easy.
At all.
So that's what I'm working on now. And I have another couple books coming out on my publishing company. And I'm going to be doing some traveling and perhaps hopefully doing a mural with the Poughkeepsie Farm Project coming up soon here for the end of the summer, maybe working with some kids. So yeah, these are all things in the works.
Yeah, sounds like a busy year. So if folks, if John, if folks want to see your work, where can they go? I know your Instagram, right? John Breiner 1.
Yep, John Breiner 1. And then johnbreiner.com is my personal artwork. And mydailyhabitpublishing.com is the photography books. And I've also worked with another illustrator publishing their books as well. Yeah.
That's great. You're an artist, illustrator, muralist, book publisher. You're everything. So that's great.
Thank you. I'm trying. I feel like with the changing of the way people consume art and ideas, that there is definitely a place for the physical object still, which might be like, oh, you're creating books. What a weird time to do that. And yeah, I agree. But I'm excited, though, to create something with a beginning and an end. So you sit down with the book and you have a beginning and you have an end, where I'm trying to get away from the endless scrolling on the computer screen.
Yeah, something tactical, something that could live on. Because they say, imagine, yeah, definitely the scrolling thing. You're there for 1 second and you move on to the next. And a book is this whole different beast there.
Right on.
Yeah. We're talking to John Breiner, one of the artists for the Catskill Revive event that happened in Wurtsboro Street Fair. John, thank you so much for talking to me, letting you know about your artwork and your future plans. Do really appreciate it. And I hope to talk to you again.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
And before we wrap up today, another reminder for you about One Small Step. That's that program that brings strangers with different political views together to record a conversation, not to debate politics, but to learn who we are as people. Radio Catskill has partnered with StoryCorps to bring the One Small Step program to the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. And we've seen people embrace the experience and through the process find a connection with their conversation partner. To date, more than 4,500 people in 40 U.S. states have participated in One Small Step. Let's listen to a conversation, an excerpt of a conversation from participants Nancy and Eric, who recorded their One Small Step conversation in Oxford, Ohio.
I'm a really large family. I'm the baby of eight.
I have a rather small family. I have one brother, and I first became aware of politics during the presidential election of Barack Obama. My parents had different views on the entire thing, and what I've seen is that it could ruin marriages and ruin childhoods.
My first marriage was to a Republican. My father-in-law lovingly called me Hanoi Jane. So I understand when you say how it can destroy families. I understand that. When I read your little biography,
oh boy,
I said, this can be an old white guy. I know who this is. I know who this is. And then you walked in and I was like, holy crap, he's young.
Right.
I was surprised.
I know. This has been an eye-opening experience.
I agree. I'm glad we did it. We didn't argue. We didn't raise any voices. And I didn't swear, which is amazing.
Oh, no, it's been fun.
It has been fun. So do you need a ride home?
I would certainly appreciate it.
I'll take you home.
Thank you.
It's an excerpt of a conversation of Nancy and Eric, who recorded their conversation in Oxford, Ohio, as participants in the One Small Step program. You can learn about participating here in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania at our website. Just go to wjffradio.org, and we will pair you with someone with a little differing view and try to bring out the humanity in all of us. This is Radio Chatskill, and that's all for today. I'm Tim Bruno. Thank you for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian.
It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes, exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. Let's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9. Here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, mixed clouds and sun with scattered thunderstorms, some gusty winds and small hail possible with some of those thunderstorms, a high of 76. Tonight, partly cloudy, low of 65. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, humid, warmer, a high of 86. And the thunderstorm threat comes back in a big way Friday through the weekend, mainly on Saturday. It's 11 o'clock.